When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The answer is have a process. And by the way, Tayo, I don't care if it's my process. It's just have a process. Most companies don't have a process. When I say a process, let's be clear. Mm-hmm. A process has a series of steps that you go through every time, and you don't take shortcuts. You do your due diligence and your homework. Even when you get a gut feel, that's great. You don't just start skipping steps and getting sloppy. That's the first thing. Most companies don't have a process. I mean a process like, show me your process on a piece of paper. A process that is predictive, right? What good is a process that's not predictive? Like, let's just flip a coin and be done with it. Should I hire or should I not hire him? And most companies, their average accuracy is 50-50, so you might as well just flip a coin. So that's the first thing. If you have a process, even if it's not mine, you're highly likely to make fewer mistakes. You're also more likely to have diversity, to have an inclusive spirit, because you're focusing on those things that are predictive and not bullshit, things that are not predictive. When you have a diverse environment, you're more likely to win because of the diversity of thought. I don't mean diversity of height or origin or skin tone. I just mean people in a room that think about things differently are more likely to come up with a better solution.
How you dare, people with different thoughts are more likely to come up with a better solution. Have you ever wondered how to recruit rock stars, how to recruit the best candidate for your startup, for your team, maybe as a co-founder or whatever you want to do? Have you ever wondered how to recruit the right people for the right culture? Well, you're in luck, because that's today's guest, Jeff Hyman, who is a four-time CEO, has made over 3,000 hires, and has over 25 years of executive recruiting. He talks about all these things and more, how he got into the field, what he's noticed with the trends, and how digital media can actually help you invite the right type of people. We're talking about how to recruit rock stars for your company. Enjoy the episode. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Jeff Hyman. Now, Jeff launched his recruiting career at Heidrick & Struggles at Spencer Stuart. Today, he's Chief Talent Officer at a Chicago-based Strong Suit Executive Search, and along the way, Jeff created four companies backed by $50 million in venture capital. He currently teaches the MBA course about recruiting at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, and host a 5-star Strong Suit podcast. So he's a fellow podcaster like me here. He's also been featured by Inc., Fortune, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, CNBC, Business Insider, Bloomberg, and other media outlets. His new book, Recruit Rock Stars, has garnered so much praise. You know, people have talked about how they read the book in 1 week and they loved it. Everybody wants to hire A players. But you know, this book helps you understand what B players are. And so we're going to basically go into the mindset of what it takes to recruit rock stars, what it takes to be the type of person that can assemble a great team, and how to assess and access your company's DNA. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
It is so great to be here, Tayo. How are you?
The pleasure is mine. I love your energy. I'm excited. And I think it's a great day to be alive.
Every day is, right?
Every day is. Speaking of being alive, what makes you, what brings you life? You know, what was the thing as a kid that you knew that you needed to do in order to become the best version of yourself?
And then how did I get there? I had two passions as a kid. I was the nerdiest kid you could find. Big afro, couldn't get a date to save my life. got my first computer when I was 13 years old, and so I was not your idea of Mr. Popular. Probably the opposite of you, I'm guessing.
Yeah. No. people always make that. People always think it's different. I, initially, very, very hyper kid. I've always been hyper. But when I grew up in Nigeria, I was fine. I was like, just a normal kid. When I started to grow up in different cultures, I had this inferiority complex because I was the different one everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
So that was kind of what was happening. So maybe people on the outside thought something was going on, but on the inside, I felt very inferior. And I'm also this like walking contradiction where I played sports a lot, but I'm also a full-on nerd. Comic books, Harry Potter.
We're going to get along just nicely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I played the sports. I did all the track and all that, but I also had those things. But I had to work internally. Like I said, this career for me is as much a personal thing as it is a professional thing, because I've always wanted to know what it's like to be seen, heard, and understood for who you are. And now that's what I try to make sure other people do. So,
well, I can promise you that I can out-nerd you, Tayo. Here are my two passions. Okay. I was 13 years old, playing the oboe in a symphony.
Oh, okay.
Which is not a great way to meet the ladies. And like I said, got my first computer. I started my first computer first business when I was 14. It was not a lemonade stand. It was a database marketing company. And I don't know. Something about it just clicked. I loved the creativity of creating music. I love the creativity of building a business. Both are obviously team sports, whether you're in a symphony or starting a company. Wow. And so I was on my way. They really turned me on way more, by the way, than sitting in a classroom. My grades were nothing to write home about. I much prefer to do stuff and get stuff done.
Well, I think you might have won that battle. But so then, okay, then take me to the point where you now started getting jobs. We talked about your career. You've had this illustrious career. You've raised a lot of money. What were the pitfalls on your way there?
Well, I'm sure my career is littered with the same kind of things that a lot of people experience. So much of job satisfaction, I think it's 50%, is your relationship with your manager. People don't quit jobs, they quit bosses. And I've had some of the worst bosses, and I've been very blessed to have some incredible lifelong friend mentors, in your wedding kind of bosses. And I've seen the difference firsthand, and I think most of the listeners can probably identify with that. And so, in those experiences, you learn what to do and what to replicate, and you learn what never to do. And you hopefully take those on board as you go into your next role. So that was a big thing that I learned, was just how to interview a potential boss and make sure we were going to click and make sure I was going to learn from him or grow from her or whatever. There's plenty of crappy bosses out there.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. And that was evident. Well, I started off with two crappy bosses, right? Two military dictatorships. And, one of the things I noticed with leadership is that I think a true leader understands what it's like to allow people to be the heroes in their stories. And I always say this, it's not that the leader is, he or she is caring about being the hero. They're like, hey, this is my job here to ensure that you, as an ABC player, get to work in your own lane and under the best conditions. And that takes a lot of understanding who you're dealing with. And so what would you say, because you've done a lot of research, you wrote a whole book on this, what would you say is the best way to tap into people's competitive advantages?
I think it's a mindset question first. And what I see a lot of managers and leaders do is they focus on managing their time up. So they focus on impressing their boss. They focus on getting acclaim, on presenting at the right meetings or getting in front of their investors, whatever. I think if you become an exceptional leader and focus your time down, if you will, building your team, recruiting amazing people, developing them, creating a place where they can do the best work of their life, people will notice. You will move up. There's just no question, because that is such a rare skill. I think it's a bit of a gift, because not everyone cares about developing a team. Now, ironically, if you're an individual contributor, you're not leading a team, then your number one job is to focus on impressing your boss, doing a great job, creating value, never letting him or her make a mistake. But once you become a leader, a manager of people, it's all about managing down, not up.
Managing down, not up. And why do you think people focus on managing up?
Because they worry about politics. They worry about cover their ass. They worry about keeping their seat. They worry about stuff that doesn't matter. If you don't create a great team that in turn creates great results, you're not going to last long anyway.
Yeah.
So I just don't buy that you should spend 95% of your time managing up. Now, I'm not saying it's unimportant, especially in a larger organization, but I generally find that great results get noticed. They'll get noticed internally by your boss and his boss or her boss, and they'll get noticed by headhunters like me, and we will find a great opportunity for you to move up at another place if we need to.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just don't spend their time developing their team.
That's 100% right. And you said something that got me curious. You said they would get noticed by headhunters like you. Now, occasionally, you know, I meet a lot of headhunters, and I'm always curious as to how they even find talent. You know, how they figure out who's a good person to be this executive in this firm. I'm just curious about that process.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. It's like matchmaking.
It is a little bit of matchmaking, like dating. It's a little bit psychology. It's a little bit luck and timing. You know, happen to come across the right person at the right time. It's kissing a lot of frogs, so I wish I could say it's sexy, but I'm on the phone all day, every day with people across the country. And you are so lucky when you meet someone who is a rare talent, just gifted. They can name their ticket these days because the unemployment rate being as low as it is means they had a lot of opportunities. So how do you do it? Well, Tayo, it's being a little bit skeptical, right? I don't rely on a resume. I don't believe that just because you went to a great school that somehow qualifies you. I actually love people that learned in the school of hard knocks. I love people that had adversity at a young age. They become very resilient and very able to overcome obstacles when times get tough in business. I look for great, like I said, great team builders, people that know how to recruit and build great teams. They can almost do anything in any industry, in any function. They're very transportable. Whereas people that manage up and are good at optics and politics, that doesn't interest me because that's not a good predictor that you'll be successful in the job that I'm trying to fill for my client. So it's results, right? It's quantifiable, objective, and by the way, referenceable results. That's how you find it.
Referenceable results. You hearing that, people? I always tell people to quantify, be able to quantify the results, but that takes it to the next level. Referenceable results.
If you can't put me in touch with the majority of managers you've had, at least in the past, I don't know, 8 to 10 years, if for some reason I can't talk to them, even if there's a really good reason, and I'm taking a big chance because I can't validate what you've told me, right? And I'm not in the business of taking chances. So I would far rather invest my time with a candidate who says, you can talk to any manager I've ever had. They'll tell you the good, bad, and ugly. But in general, that level of confidence and that kind of referenceability is a good thing. Awesome. Usually those calls go very well.
Yeah. No, love it. Now, in the book, your book, Recruit Rock Stars, you show people how to fire, you show people how to
find. No, we talk about firing too.
You do, I know you do, but I was trying to say, you show people how to find, hire, and keep the best of the best.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to talk about then is, why do you feel like we should replace job description with job invitation?
Sure. So when you think about job descriptions, what most people can identify with is they suck, right? They're boring, they're uninspiring. They read kind of like a hostage negotiation letter. You know, you must do this, you must have this, you must have that. It's a laundry list of bullet points. A study was done about 3 years ago that found that those bullet points can really work against you. 80% of men and almost 100% of women reported that they will not apply for a job unless they feel they meet 100% of that list. And guess what? Very few people meet 100% of that list. It's just, you know, you're narrowing it down and cutting it so thin. When you say 8 to 10 years experience of that and this industry experience at this, and you must have gone to this school, and there's just not a lot of people, especially in a 4% unemployment market. So instead, a job invitation is a different mindset. It is a advertisement. It's what job descriptions for probably supposed to be. And I pay a professional copywriter to write mine. You know, cost $50. And these things are just beautifully written. They inspire. They talk about what's so special about the business and the mission that we're on. What is so compelling about our industry and its growth? What are the unique challenges in this role? And what are you going to get to do? It doesn't really talk about your requirements at all. Leave that to me. I'll figure it out. You know, if we have a conversation, I'll figure out if it makes sense to if there's a fit. But instead, it's much more of a job advertisement with an invitation to let's have a confidential discussion, as opposed to a job description, which is written by some, you know, legal person or HR person, and it's just a bunch of bullet points. That doesn't move anybody.
Yeah, no, the bullet points don't move anybody at all. That's when
they don't. What moves people is stories. And by the way, video should be in a link to a video should be in every job invitation that has some of your top performers talking about why this is such a special place. Why do they love it? Why is there great opportunity? That's what moves and inspires people, not a bunch of bullet points.
Okay, awesome. And then if people said it's a job invitation, that's a better mindset type thing. You talk about mindset a lot. That's a better mindset thing as opposed to description, because I'm inviting you
into our home.
Yeah.
I'm inviting, and by the way, you're a rock star, so you're doing well already. You're making money. You're currently employed. And I'm inviting you to consider switching. And that involves risk. That involves uncertainty. You're busy, so it just involves time of the process. I need to entice you. I need to tease you and invite you into my home, and let's just have a discussion. I don't know if it's the right fit for you. I'm not going to be so presumptive to say you need to look at this opportunity. I just tell people, look, in 15 minutes, let's have a short call.
Absolutely. Okay. So then I talked about this in your intro. You talk about how to assess your company's DNA and use those characteristics to find candidates who are guaranteed to fit. Now, we're moving from just the job description to job invitation. So how does assessing company's DNA and using those characteristics help you with your fit?
Yeah. On a couple of dimensions. The difference is that the DNA is the essence of the person, how they are wired. Just like we all have DNA that determines our height and weight and skin and hair, receding hair in my case. we all have a DNA that psychologists tell us is pretty hardwired by the time we're about 8 to 10 years old. And if you're going to be a very detail-oriented, obsessive person, if you're going to be an introvert, if you're going to be creative, if you're going to be musical, you are that person by 8 to 10 years old in general. And that is highly predictive of what your behavior will be on the job. So interviewing you and understanding your DNA and whether that's a fit with our company's DNA, because every company has one, is very predictive. Where people go wrong is they mix culture with perks, right? We have a ping pong table and we're fun and we love to have beer and blah, blah, blah. Those are perks, right? I'm talking about the essence of the person. And I haven't yet figured out how to interview for culture fit. I'm looking for a match, just like dating, on those core 3 or 4 DNA characteristics. And by the way, if I can find those, I have a lot of room in my home for different backgrounds, cultures, diversity, gender mix, etc. Because those DNA characteristics are so hard to find that when you find them in someone, you make room on your team for that person. And that they are highly likely to be successful.
Highly likely to be successful. That's amazing.
Even if you got to train them on the skills of the job, that's the easy part. DNA, I can't change. DNA can't be faked or changed or trained. You know, Southwest Airlines was built on, you know, we hire for attitude and we train for skill. They didn't care what your background or experience is. If you're one of their flight attendants that just has this big personality, they're funny, they're engaging, they're warm, they'll train you on how to become a flight attendant. That part's easy.
Yeah, no, and I love what you said, because I say this often. I think it's easier to train for the skill than the DNA or the attitude. Like, you know, someone like, maybe it's because someone like me, I didn't necessarily go to the best schools. I went to like the B schools or the, you know, good schools. I got the 3.6 GPA, but I was never quite Harvard.
Better than I got.
Yeah, well, you see, but that was the thing. So I was always like, And then you also have the your foreigner type thing. So you always have all these strikes because they're like, our schools are like, we don't want it. We have this quota. We have all that. And so in my mind, I was always like, what? I think the scrappy kids are always better. You
know, absolutely. Because I think look, I can't say always better, but I will say, Tayo, that it is too much of a coincidence.
Yeah.
That when I spend time with people who have faced a lot of adversity in their life, it could be a cancer scare. It can be they traveled a lot at a young age, moved around a lot as a young age. It definitely forms and hardwires that DNA. Yeah. And just as there are many people that have gone to a top school that I would not recommend to a client, or maybe for a particular position I would not recommend, the inverse is true. And so there's a lid for every pot, and there's never a need to be insecure about it, apologize for it. We are what we are. And you just got to find the right home and the right boss that doesn't care about GPA or school or any of that noise, which, by the way, has been proven to be not that predictive anyway.
Yeah, that's true. No, yeah, and you're right. Always is too strong of a word. But yeah, but I've always wondered if there was a measuring system to be able to test for scrappiness, because, you know, I got an MBA, right? So, but whenever we were looking to fit the criteria, I was like, but I think you should probably measure for creativity and, you know, just that stick-to-itiveness, because that's what an entrepreneur is. And, you know, obviously I didn't have enough power to argue my grades. They still said, sorry, you're not going to be here, but you need your GMAT to be higher. I was like, all right, fine. But I think that would help a lot of people. Okay.
Even Google, Tayo, even Google has banned the use of GPA. They used to look, you know, you had a 3.8 and top school, and they would give you all these brain-bending mind teaser questions. They banned all that stuff because it doesn't work. It's not predictive of anything.
I agree. 100%. And we're probably breaking a few hearts here. I'm not saying that A students aren't good, because I was mostly A student, right? I had some Bs, A, B. So it's not like I'm coming from that, but I just want there to be, you know, us to look deeper than just
absolutely
those type of things.
And if the company you're talking to is not willing to do that, then it's the wrong place. You're going to be miserable there, and don't waste your time.
Absolutely. Speaking of methods to make sure that we find people that don't waste our time, you have a 10-step, you actually call it bulletproof. So this one I can actually...
It is bulletproof. If you follow it, it's bulletproof. If you don't follow it, it's not so bulletproof.
Well, can you walk us through your bulletproof 10-step method for landing the best talent based on...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Data instead of gut feeling.
Yeah, let's pick a few versus trying to go through all of them. Let's pick a couple that I think are especially important.
Okay.
You know, one is interviews. This is the number one used way to assess candidates, and it's the number one abused way. Most interviews are so useless at predicting the success of the individual. They're unstructured. Random questions in a random order that you ask different questions to different candidates, and you walk out of there not knowing anything more other than your unconscious bias, which is really important. And it's not just important in diversity and inclusion, which of course it is, but if I meet someone as a human being, I form my initial impressions in 30 to 60 seconds. That is just who we are as people, and we have to acknowledge that. We then, because we hate being wrong as people, we spend the rest of the interview looking for data that does nothing but reinforce that hypothesis. So She walks in, she has a bad handshake, bad posture, and kind of introverted. I immediately say in my back of my brain, ugh, she'd be a terrible sales rep or horrible director of marketing. This is going to be a waste of my time. And then we look for data that supports that. But your gut will be wrong half the time for a lot of reasons. Not the least of which is those things are not predictive. Her handshake, her posture, if she's introverted, it doesn't matter. She still may be a gifted sales rep or marketing head or software developer. And the inverse is true, right? He walks in, he's out of central casting, he's gorgeous and he's tall. Mm-hmm. People assume they've done studies, right? They assign he's a better leader. He's going to be more successful. He has a deeper voice. There's all these things that our brain pollutes us with. So the book talks a lot about how to take your interviews and make them actually useful. Now, they're still not going to be perfect. You're still going to make mistakes, false negatives and false positives, but a structured interview can actually be much better. So that's a big one. And when we talk about that in the book, but probably the biggest one is chapter 6, where we talk about the test drive. And this is the number one most predictive step in a recruiting process, yet 91% of companies skip this step. Most companies have a great interview, and the hiring manager says, I found it. I found my guy. He's our new head of marketing, or she's our new head of sales. And they move right to an offer. And the problem is the person that showed up for the interview is then not the person that shows up for the job, right? Because great interviews or great candidates are not necessarily great employees, and vice versa. Some of my best hires ever didn't give a great interview, right? They were introverted or reserved, whatever. So the test drive, and the book lays this out, is essentially a simulation, right? For a couple hours or a couple days or a couple weeks, whatever time I can get with you. And I'm going to give you an assignment, a project that simulates the job. If it's a software developer job, I'm going to have you write some code, and then we're going to go through it together. If it's a head of marketing job, I'm going to have you review my website and tear it apart and tell me the 8 things that need to be improved. If it's a sales job, I'm going to give you a dossier to study about a prospective customer and our products, and you're going to come back and present to us. Whatever simulates the job, and I haven't found a job yet that I can't come up with a test drive for, that is a far, far better predictor than the interview, because I'm going to see you in action, right? See how you talk, how you make judgments, how you ask questions, how you absorb information. Frankly, can you follow the friggin' directions? Some of the people I give a job test to or job audition can't even follow the directions. And that's the best work you're ever going to see out of that person. And by the way, pay him if you have to. It doesn't matter, because you're going to avoid a lot of mistakes this way. So the book talks about that, and it's a crucial step in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the fact that you brought up job simulation, because that's so key, right? Even there are companies, especially I got my MBA, and a lot of times there were companies that will come here recruiting.
Yeah.
And they would give you case studies or stuff like
that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So those type of things I always find, I thought they would like, that's kind of cool, because you get to assess the skills before you even determine if they're good for the job. And it's based on their merit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. But a lot of companies, most companies skip it. And it's really a shame, because it helps to identify candidates that will do well on the job, despite how they do in the interview. And those are the ones that you want on the team. And your close rate goes up. You're actually more likely to get more yeses when you go through a test drive, because now the candidate has also seen you in action. They can see the kind of work they're going to do. You've taken some of the mystery and the risk out for them and made it more compelling. And so you actually get a higher percentage of yeses versus nos.
Yeah. No, this is brilliant. Well, then I feel, a lot of your questions are going to be very similar, but digging a little deeper. You also talk about how to attract winners like a magnet. I can see why you wrote the book. You're very good with analogies like things, things like this. But when you're attracting winners like a magnet and avoiding mistakes that result in bad hires, from the sourcing and the interview, which you just mentioned, how can you make sure that you don't do those things? How can you make sure that when you're sourcing, when you're interviewing, and you're closing, and you're onboarding, you're ensuring that you have straight up winners?
So the answer is have a process. And by the way, Tayo, I don't care if it's my process. It's just have a process. Most companies don't have a process. When I say a process, let's be clear. Mm-hmm. A process has a series of steps that you go through every time, and you don't take shortcuts. You do your due diligence and your homework. Even when you get a gut feel, that's great. You don't just start skipping steps and getting sloppy. That's the first thing. Most companies don't have a process. I mean a process like, show me your process on a piece of paper. A process that is predictive, right? What good is a process that's not predictive? Like, let's just flip a coin and be done with it. Should I hire or should I not hire him? And most companies, their average accuracy is 50-50, so you might as well just flip a coin. So that's the first thing. If you have a process, even if it's not mine, you're highly likely to make fewer mistakes. You're also more likely to have diversity, to have an inclusive spirit, because you're focusing on those things that are predictive and not bullshit, things that are not predictive. When you have a diverse environment, you're more likely to win because of the diversity of thought. I don't mean diversity of height or origin or skin tone. I just mean people in a room that think about things differently are more likely to come up with a better solution. And in an increasingly competitive world where more and more of your customers are women or diverse or global, if you have a culture that doesn't reflect that, you're going to lose because your competitor does. Yeah. So you're more likely to win on that dimension. The last thing I would say is that you do need to be a little skeptical because your gut will mislead you. I try not to trust my gut. I try, even after 25 years of doing this, to go through the process. I still make mistakes, but if my gut says, oh, he's a winner, I really try to dig a little deeper, make sure I'm not missing something. Am I getting emotionally tied to this candidate or whatever? And when you don't have a backup candidate, it's very easy to start skipping steps, to start making mistakes, because you're desperate. You succumb to warm body hiring. I got to get a butt in the seat. When I'm always interviewing, when you're always recruiting and you develop a pipeline of talent, so you're always interviewing every day, every week, and you spend, by the way, a good chunk of your time on it, you always have a backup candidate and you don't feel that same sense of desperation and nervousness that if I lose this candidate, there's always another one, right?
Yeah.
But it does mean changing your mindset from that just-in-time hiring to always be hiring, always be recruiting, just like, you know, always be selling.
Always be closing, always be selling.
Always be closing, right. Yeah. Always be closing. What movie was that from?
It's like Glenn Ross.
Yeah. Perfect. Glengarry Glen Ross. You gotta see that.
Yeah. But always be recruited. And that's an amazing thing. And thank you for taking us through that framework. And the reason why I did that is because I wanted everyone, you know, listening to understand and put themselves in different positions as recruiters, as CEOs, as entrepreneurs, and whether it's, you know, leading up, leading down, like you said, understanding where they fit into today's world. Because the reality is, the world doesn't look like it did before. I mean, I'm the typical millennial, right? I'm in my late 20s, but in the previous generations, recruiting was different, just because of the different platforms that you have. Now you have more flexibility with where people can find jobs, how people can reach out to you, whether it's LinkedIn or digital media. So understanding how you're positioning yourself, where you said you make yourself referenceable, understanding how you're building your brand to ensure that, you know, your work is what speaks loudest about you, is so important. And
everything. It used to be 20, 30, 40 years ago. You relied on a resume and what schools they went to and what companies they worked at. You know, they worked at IBM or Microsoft or whatever. You don't have to do that anymore. Now I can see your work. I can see your LinkedIn reviews. I can see the names of people that you've worked with, and I can call them and I can get them on the phone and I can check you out and do so much due diligence that I don't have to rely on these BS, you know, indicators. As long as I know what those predictors are, which again, the book lays out, but that's not even rocket science either. And as long as I am disciplined about a process.
Yeah. As long as you know what the predictors are and you're disciplined about a process. Talk to me about why you wrote the book. We're getting ready to close here, but I'm always curious about authors and why a book.
Yeah. Well, I would say, to be honest with you, Tayo, this was my first and last book. It is a labor of love.
Okay.
Way more work than I bargained for, but I'm very glad I did it. And I did it originally, not as a book, but as a, I guess you'd say, kind of a guide to help some of my clients, because I found when I would do an executive search with my clients, I would have a process, but then I would give them the introduction and they would botch it up. Their interviews stank, or their reference checks stank, or whatever. So I kind of put together a guide of, here's how you do it. You know, I kind of taught my clients, and then a few of them encouraged me to turn it into a book, and here we are, there's a book. So it's relevant to any company in any industry at any size, 5 people or 5,000.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I did it. It's like I said, it's a labor of love.
Yeah, wait, one and only. But you definitely put all your effort into this because the book is really good. And
you're nervous. Like, I had no idea people would like it. You know,
of course.
When the first Amazon reviews come out, and I've been very blessed, but you're like, oh boy, is this a piece of garbage? Are people going to love it or like it or hate it? It's a very vulnerable type of thing. You're kind of putting your baby out there. Podcasting, and I have a podcast too. Every episode, I get a new chance. If one episode isn't great, the next one might be. But when you do a book, it just feels so permanent.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it is in many ways because it's not as easy to just like re-update or do that. You have to like go through another process. It's not like you can on a podcast say, "Hey, I'm sorry about something I made yesterday."
That's right.
But I want to fix this.
That's right.
But listen to your story. You said you're a self-proclaimed nerd. You had interesting times where you weren't necessarily the best student in school, but look at what you're doing now. You're raising money and all this. And you got a podcast and you got a great book here. There are certain people in my audience who have experienced the identity crisis that both of us have experienced at a young age or even sometimes in adulthood. And when we look at the world today, sometimes that heightens our identity crisis. So I'm curious if you could talk to those people right now who may be listening and trying to figure out their way into the world, and maybe because they feel like the world is only suited for only people that are extroverts and have those type of personalities. So
I am very optimistic, more than I ever have been in 25 years of doing this, that a number of factors have come together, are conspiring and creating these amazing tailwinds that make it possible for anyone to build the kind of career that they want to build. And on the flip side, for companies to build a great company if they're committed to recruiting great people. You can now recruit from around the world. And if you're providing your talents and your gifts, you can provide those to companies around the world. So just your sheer market opportunity has increased dramatically. The internet made that possible. The transparency, you can get noticed. You can build a personal brand, which I think all of us need to do as individuals managing a career. And you can build an employer brand that shows people why they should come work with you, why they should choose you to spend 2, 3, 4 years of their career working at your company. It's easy when you're Amazon or Apple and Google, you're flooded with hundreds of thousands of resumes unsolicited every year. But when you're a 5-person consulting firm or a 100-person little website firm, you need to build your employer brand. And now that's possible. Again, with the internet, with video, you can tell your story. You can build referral programs and make it engaging in a way that you never could before. It doesn't matter your origin, your country, what school you went to, your GPA. I was on academic probation. You can do anything you want to do. Now, you can't fake it. You gotta live and love the stuff you're doing. And I think that's where people struggle, figuring out what that is. That's very hard. And Tayo, I don't have any great answers there other than you better figure out the earlier the better in your career what really turns you on, right? I found it at 13. Some people find it at 50. But the sooner you figure it out, the better off you're going to be.
And
once you do, you're off to the races. There's nothing anymore that can hold you back other than your mindset, which can be very, very limiting for some people.
It is. And I absolutely agree. And the reason why I always start off every podcast with people telling their stories is because a lot of publications, and you and I have been featured on them, Forbes and all, on Fortune, they start off with the success story first. And that has always bothered me a lot of times. And
it's an overnight success.
Yeah, years. Yeah.
This book, the book I wrote, you know, it's a best-selling book, but it was 25 years in the making.
Exactly.
And I'm still not happy with it.
Exactly.
And overnight successes, the problem is the media loves them because they make a great story, Facebook, Google, et cetera. Those are the rare exceptions, right? Mm-hmm. Trump, politics aside, right, worked his fingers to the bone from age 20. Every great entrepreneur at Amazon, you know, Bezos was stuffing books in boxes out of his garage 25 years ago. Now he's the world's richest man. So the overnight success myth makes great stories and movies, but it's not legit.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's why I love what you said, because I want people to understand that thing you said. You know, I knew what I wanted to do when I was 10, but it wasn't until I was 22, after near-death experience, that I was brave enough to step into that. And that was
Near-death experience helped create your life.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you're pretty grateful.
Yeah.
Got you going.
Yeah, it did. Because what happened was, at that moment, I realized that life was too short and I'd been dying instead of living. And
a lot of people never have that quote unquote good fortune of getting that kick in the ass, and they become 25, 30, 40, 45 before they realize, oh, you know what? I don't have infinite amounts of time on this planet.
Yeah, yeah. And you brought the great point is, many times you said 8, 9, we know what we want, but what we have to do, especially in today's world, which is very difficult. I'm not saying I had to go through several things for me to actually just say, I had to go through a freaking near-death experience to say, okay, let me try this. Other people don't get that near-death experience because, you know, not everybody goes through that type of experience. And because you don't have something that shakes you up sometimes, you're like, I'm comfortable, right?
Yeah,
and the problem
totally.
With comfort zones is that it's a nice place to live, but nothing grows there. So, I that's why I wanted you to say what you said, because I felt like you would have a true, authentic place to come from where you're like, yes, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be unwindy. You don't have to have this type of look or have that type of face. But if you stay committed, if it takes 25 years, it takes 5 years, if you stay committed to essentially being who you are and understanding that what you're doing is in service of your big picture, more times than not, you'll have a more fulfilled life.
Absolutely. And even if you fail,
yeah,
which you will, by the way.
I definitely will. 100%.
Those failures teach you so much. Like I said earlier, when you have a crappy manager, you learn so much from them about how not to be a manager that it actually helps you quite a bit over the long term.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. You're this is amazing. Thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Thank you, Ty.
You.
Easiest way is the website, which is the name of the book, recruitrockstars.com, recruitrockstars.com. If they want to email me, I'm at jeff@recruitrockstars.com.
Yeah. Okay. Recruitrockstars.com. We're going to put that in the show notes. And we'll make sure that everything that you said is all linked here, because this is truly an amazing book. And you don't even have to be recruited, but I think this helps you with a mindset of understanding how you fit in today's landscape.
Absolutely. It's really written for the non-recruiter. But
yes. If
you're going to build a great career, at some point you're going to need to recruit people to your team, as employees, as contractors, whatever. Because business and life is not a solo sport, other than, you know, fishing and golfing, which I guess some things are solo sports. But for the most part, they're not. But it was really fun to be on. Thanks, Tayo.
No problem. Before we go, I had this last question. This is the last question I always ask my guests. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. So how do you use your difference to make a
difference? I help companies build exceptional teams, and it gives them an unfair advantage over their competition. These days, it is very hard to develop an unfair advantage. Technology can be copied in a week. Your marketing can be copied in a week. Your strategy can be copied in a week. But if you build a great culture, a great team, and you field the best team, you'll win. That's my mission, is to help companies do that.
Perfect. Awesome. All right. Well,
not as short and catchy as your mission, but you've had a lot of time to think about it.
No, it works. It works. And I want to thank you for spending your time with us. I know you have a very busy schedule, so thank you so much, and I can't wait for this episode to get out.
Thank you.
All right. Till next time, ladies and gentlemen, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.